Hey y'all, this is Nada and you're listening to Underground. So our guest today is all the way from UK. He's a big deal in the house and the techno scene. He's affiliated with labels like Suara, Two Room Records, has been covered by DJ Magazine. He's also been featured in The Attack magazine. His name is Michael and he goes by the stage name Huxley. Hey Michael, thank you so much for coming on board.
Thank you very much for having me on. It's a pleasure.
So your recent release, Who Says, with Two Room Records has been climbing up the charts on Beatport like crazy and it's finding its way on like a bunch of playlists like on Spotify, Apple, what have you. So before it all started, can you take me back to the beginning and tell me all about what it was like to be an artist, why you pursued house and techno and, you know, everything from the very start?
Okay, cool. All right. Well, so it all started quite a long time ago, really. I mean, I'm 35 now. When I was around the age of like 10, I was learning the guitar and all that kind of stuff. But I wasn't that good, really. So I kind of gave that up. And a friend of mine called Oliver, he discovered rave music. So like drum and bass, happy hardcore, that kind of stuff. Used me to that when I was like 12 or something. So I became pretty obsessed with that. You know, like over here you could get like a tape pack, which was like 6 tapes recorded from a rave. So like that was the only way of kind of experiencing what was going on. And so after that, we kind of, I begged my parents for some decks. Knew at that age, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to be a DJ. So they bought me a pair of like crappy decks, thinking that it would be like everything else. I would pick it up for like 2 minutes and then order. So I did that. Luckily I was lucky enough to have it. And then slowly, obviously at that age, I wasn't really making any money. So slowly I was buying vinyl when I could, every so often. And it was around this time as well, my brother, who's a little bit older than me, started to produce himself. I mean, he's classically trained on the piano. I just kind of taught myself, basically. So I used to watch him for hours on how he was making the music. And we started on a program called Impulse Tracker, which was a very basic program that was on DOS through, like, not even on Windows. It was before Windows. So we started on that. And then slowly I became a bit more confident and then started wanting to do my own stuff. So I did that. And around kind of 15, 16, me and a couple of friends got together and started running some parties just for like my school, basically, which we, at that age, we were earning like 200 or 300 quid every 2 weeks or something. Then we started, then that kind of paid for my habit in terms of record buying. So I kind of started buying more and more records, getting more and more into it. And yeah, and then started kind of, the production kind of started to get a bit better when I was 17. When I was 17, I won a competition through a website called Stay Locked, which basically paid for you to put your first vinyl out. So like 200 copies or something. So I won that competition. It was under a different name back in those days, and it was like Garage, basically, UK Garage. And so they pressed these vinyls, but me being 17, I had no idea what to do with them because they didn't distribute them for you. They just basically pressed them, and then they turned up at my parents' house. And I was like, right, what the fuck do I do with these now? So, yeah, so then I just kind of realized I had to start distributing them, started sending them out myself. Or whatever, they did okay. But anyway, that kind of gave me the passion and the drive to then want to release more music. More people kind of started picking up on it. Luckily enough, that vinyl became a bit of unbeknownst to me until about 2 years later, that vinyl, one of the tracks on there actually started getting played quite a lot in clubs in like Sheffield, in Leeds. And obviously I'd never really been up there. So I started to get a few bookings and started to interact with the DJs over there and started this kind of garage career. It was kind of in a time where you could still release a vinyl and sell like 1,000 copies, which nowadays it's just like physical copies, which nowadays just doesn't really happen unless you're a few, like certain artists or whatever. So that kind of gave me the drive. And then when I went to university, I was kind of still doing it on the side, but I wasn't really gigging as much. I kind of turned a bit away from the DJing just because I was a bit bored of it. And I didn't have the time. Obviously, I was at uni. I wanted to just, you know, drink, have fun. And then, but my passion for garage, although it still remained, I realized that I wanted to do something different. I wanted to kind of, when I went out for a night out myself with my friends, we would always go to like minimal night or deep house night. So it was around, I got back from university, was just playing around with music still a little bit. I started doing some engineering for people and all that kind of stuff. And another friend of mine called Tim, who's called Ethel, is his production name. But we've been tight for a long time, actually. And he kind of got involved with the parties when I was like 16, but a bit later down the line. But anyway, so he introduced me. He asked me to start making some deep house together. So I thought, okay, cool, let's do it. We just sat down for like 6 months or something because we were both not working at that point. We just got back from university. To find a real job, basically. Yeah. And we just started writing together, and you know, the music started getting better, and then we just thought, fuck it, let's send this out to someone and let's kind of push it forward. So we did. So we sent it out, made a demo CD. It was like 2009, so people were still sending out demo CDs.
Yeah.
So we made it a bit special. We made it look like a vinyl, so we got like a little funny case and stuff. Sent it to a bunch of labels who we were like, who we really enjoyed at the time. And one of them was a label called Cecile. So it was run by a guy called Nick Curley. And luckily his girlfriend saw our demo CD, thought it looked fun. And then he listened to it. And we were lucky enough that he signed our first EP as Ethel and Huxley. I needed a name though. I wasn't called Huxley at that point. I was reading A Brave New World by Aldous Huxley at that time. And I just loved that book anyway. And I just thought, right, Huxley, that will do. So didn't think anything more of it. Didn't think I'd still be using the name like 12 years later. So yeah, and then that just kind of progressed for the next couple of years. I started doing some shows just in the UK mainly, once or twice a month. And then kind of actually I was ready to give it all up. I'd just been to Ibiza on a holiday with some friends, I think in 2011. And, you know, it was going okay, but it wasn't like going that well. I couldn't maintain myself. It wasn't like big money or anything. And like, I couldn't live off it. I was still living at home with my parents at this point to help subsidize it and doing a few odd jobs. And then suddenly I was about to give it up. I started sending out my CV or resume or whatever. Luckily, nobody wanted me, so I was a bit stuck. And then 3 months later, I made a track called Let It Go, which was picked up by some friends of mine called Hypercolor. After that, I wrote a track called Box Clever. And then those two tracks basically transformed me from kind of someone who had a bit of heat, but wasn't really like popping off or whatever, however you want to say it, to someone who was then touring two or three times a week, you know, traveling the world. And then kind of since then, it's just been like that ever since. I've moved through quite a few genres, through labels, done like an album on the way and stuff.
That's kind of where
you find me today. Do you know what I mean? So that's the story, really.
Also, like, what do you produce on today? Like, what DAWs do you use?
I use Logic. I've used Logic since I was like 19. I thought about moving to Ableton more so recently because a friend of mine, Shadow Child, Simon, who also was a staunch Logic user, has now changed over to start working on Ableton. And, you know, he's someone I never thought would change. And if he's telling me I should do it, so I bought it like 6 months ago or something. And it's installed on my computer. I think I opened it once. I got frustrated that I couldn't do exactly what I wanted to do. Like, I can in Logic and then kind of went back to Logic. But I think I'm going to spend the next couple of months teaching myself how it works, basically. I mean, they're all fairly similar. So, you know, it shouldn't be too difficult. And they all work on that same, you know, basic ethos or whatever. So, yeah, Logic right now.
When you produce something, what do you start with usually? Do you have like a certain thing that you follow, or it's just something that comes to you?
Normally, it depends how the song starts for me. I mean, if I'm going in completely dry, don't have a vocal that I've been sent or a sample that I found, or like a really firm idea of what I want something to be, like melody-wise or whatever, then normally I'll start with a kick, because I think, you know, a kick helps define what a track is in terms of the style. I mean, I might go back and change it, although I very rarely do that these days. I start with a kick and then normally either a little offbeat hi-hat or the bass line, because I feel like the kick and the bass are kind of, especially in house or techno, they are the basic, you know, they're the fundamental parts of the track. So kind of start with that, and then what I've been doing more recently is I've been adding a bass line and then started to build stuff around it, and then absolutely hating the bass line that I've written, and then spending like the next like couple of hours trying to write a different bass line, which is something, you know, for me bass lines always came really easily, but like I think without clubs, actually, to try bass lines out, I've become a little bit more, you know, worried about how it sounds. Because I could write something for, and because I just come off a weekend of gigs, I could instantly know this is going to work. But I think in the more recent times, I've just become a bit more wary about, like, trying to write the perfect bass line, which obviously just doesn't exist.
Yeah. So what kind of plugins are, like, your go-to when you're producing?
So there's a few things I like to use a lot. I love the Spectrasonic stuff. So Omnisphere and Trillion are like in every record that I make, basically, in some way, shape or form. Normally I use Trillion for the bass, although I've been using Subboom Bass a bit more recently. Don't know why, I just fancy the change, and Serum as well. But the Spectrasonic stuff, even though they're quite expensive, they're kind of worth it. But then again, if you don't have the money, like, Serum is great as well. I don't know how much that costs, actually. I'm doing the whole rent to own thing on Splice, and like you can try things for a little bit. So they're my kind of go-to for melodies and bass lines. And then I use Kontakt for most of my samples. I find myself these days using a lot more samples in things again. I kind of got out of the habit of doing that, but I'm really enjoying kind of using samples and things like Splice and Loop Cloud and all that stuff. If you do enough digging, because I find that sometimes people just go on Splice, find the first vocal that comes up, and like 1,000 records have the same vocal and with no effects on, no cut or anything, it's just all the same.
Yeah.
So just spend some time digging through. There's so many good samples and like keys and pads and stuff on that. So yeah, I use Kontakt for that, and then I've been doing a lot of vocal production recently, so auto-tune as well is great for that. If you can use that in a really imaginative way if you want, rather than just like bang it on if someone can't sing.
Mm-hmm. As you said, like your brother is classically trained and you weren't. So how did you do that, like to get better?
Oh, initially, I definitely struggled with it. I've always had quite a good ear for like being in tune. But obviously, when I was first starting, I didn't. And because I'd learned the guitar a little bit, I understood what chords were. I just didn't know what notes went into a chord. So the first probably 3 years or whatever, it was just me bashing around on a keyboard, really. And then slowly progressing, forcing myself to learn how to play parts rather than draw them in was something that I like was big on doing, because it forces you to play it over and over and over again. Like, you're gonna fuck it up loads of times, but right, if you get one great take, then that's good. So these days, unless it's like a really fiddly kind of sub bass bit or whatever, or like something, I try and play in everything now as a rule. Because that's the only way you're going to get better, by just constantly playing. When I first started, there was YouTube the same way, so you didn't have all these great videos that were at your disposal of watching them. Think about music theory, because it's really important. The amount of times that I've heard a great idea that's been ruined by being out of tune with a vocal, or like, you know, or sloppy musical elements that could be great but just don't quite hit the mark because, you know, your theory isn't quite there. Yeah. I mean, what about yourself? Are you trained? What about you?
I do know my basics, so I do get by. But I don't know theory like at the back of my hand. So I do struggle with, breaking things down to get to where I want to go.
Yeah.
So I spend a lot of time doing that as compared to other people. So, But I am getting better because I work on
it. I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, I play something in and then I'll come to tomorrow and I won't be able to play it again. Like, that I'm not good at playing keys. I'm a bit like you by the sound of it. Like, I can get by, and once I'm playing a riff, then I can play it. But it, like I say, it like really annoys me. A track I did a few years ago, I did called I Want You, which is one of my favorite records I've done, I can't play it anymore unless I look at the notes. And like, it's a bit stupid, really, that I can't. But that's one of the reasons I've never done live before, because I've just been too lazy to learn it. But now I'm kind of getting to a point where I think, you know, it'd be really nice if I could just sit down and actually play.
I totally feel you. And it'd be so nice to like just go and play your ideas when you have them instead of, you know, mapping out the notes.
Yeah.
So you've been affiliated with Two Room Rackets. So how do you get in touch with them, or like, how do you get noticed as an artist?
Well, luckily for me, Tour Room, I've been playing with Mark Knight. We've been kind of playing on similar shows off and on since 2013. So I've known him for a while, and then actually never really thought about doing anything together. Not that I've always really respected Tour Room, but at certain parts of our career, it just wasn't the right fit. And it's now come to the point where it kind of fits. Yeah. So I was quite lucky in the fact that, like, obviously I knew Mark, I knew Matt, who's the A&R guy there, and I just sent him a track last year which they liked and signed, and then again with Who Says I just sent it to them, and luckily I had that ongoing relationship. But what I would say is, and I've been telling this to a lot of people recently, because that seems like a big question at the moment with so many people wanting to do this, I guess, that, you know, it's harder and harder to get noticed. And but one of my big things is, like, kind of try your hardest to be on the person's radar before you even send them music. So if you like the label, do like a DJ mix, tag them in, like, on all your socials, like, be tagging people in on other things, like, send people messages on Instagram and stuff, but not about sending them your demo straight away. Engage them on something they're promoting, or like they're trying to push, or something funny, or whatever they're posting. Because if people start to see your name in a kind of familiar with you before you go, hey, look at me, this is my demo, they're a lot more likely to listen to it and actually think about it in a favorable way. I mean, I get messages just with a SoundCloud link, and I'm like, I'm not going to listen to that. You've put no effort into like trying to present me your demo or your music. That, yeah. Like, why would I give you the chance over someone who's put the work in to, like, network? I mean, networking now is obviously a bit different from when I was younger.
Yeah.
I mean, because there's no clubs at the moment and whatever. So you can't go to these people's shows and, like, show your face so people get to know you. I mean, that's one thing I would say, put the work in, right? But
yeah.
As it's not that time now, yeah, just they're the kind of things I would say. Don't just go in dry with your demo. Especially someone who runs a big label like Tool Room, who must get thousands of demo emails a day, I would imagine.
Yeah, so sure.
Like, how are they going to differentiate you from, like, 10 other people who have done the same thing? Well, the only way they're going to do that is if they recognize your name. One thing I would also say is a lot of people see these big headline labels like Tool Room or Defected or whatever, and they think, well, right, I have to be on these labels. They don't actually think about whether their music fits that label. They just see it as to put next to their name. So before you even send your music, you should be making sure that the labels you're sending it to are right.
Also, when you're touring around and when things were like pre-COVID and you have so many releases that come out, how do you find the time to, you know, keep your sets fresh and produce on the go? And like, how often do you produce? How do you do that?
Well, the thing is, I'm quite quick in the studio. I can go from a fresh idea to a finished tune in kind of 5 hours, 6 hours. I'll come back and make some changes, but the bare bones of the track could be done. Basically, I'm pretty quick. So before, when I was producing maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I would get like 3 ideas done. One of them might be okay, and then so I tweak that a little bit in the next week, but then start another kind of 3 or 4 ideas. And then that's kind of, you start to build up just a load of demos. To be honest, I think last year especially, like, not saying that I didn't enjoy it and I don't like the tracks, it's just I think I could have been more selective at what I released, because, you know, I'm in a privileged position where if I send an email saying I've got a demo, people will listen. I was lucky enough that a lot of the labels I sent them to picked it up last year, but I think that's kind of, I should have released less. But anyway, in terms of that and then keeping sets fresh, well, when you're traveling, there's so much downtime and boring, sat on a plane or, like, you know, driving from an airport to like a show or whatever, that I tend to like go through promos or listen to music when I'm traveling. And then kind of when I get to a hotel, I'll put it into record box or whatever, a proper listen. And that I find that because when I'm touring, like you say, you have such limited time, I'd much rather spend the time that I do have at home in the studio rather than going through music. Because otherwise, I, if I, yeah, I just don't think I'd get anything done if I tried to do it in a week.
Yeah. So you were saying that there was a time in your life where you wanted to give up. So what would you like to say to someone to motivate them who's probably going through the same thing right now?
I mean, I think one thing that drove me to continue really was that I was very passionate about wanting to do it. I've always wanted to do it. And I think that this industry, there's lots of highs and lows, and it can sometimes feel like everyone's against you in terms of, like, you know, holding you back or whatever you feel like. And I would say that my advice is just, you know, everyone has their own journey. You shouldn't look at your friend who might be getting a bit hype right now and you're like, shit, I'm never going to have that, because, you know, everybody lives their own life. Like, everyone has their own way. Like, me saying how I was lucky enough to start doing this is going to be completely different to the next 10 people. So all I would say is have some patience. Like, don't will everything to happen straight away. Put, like, if you think you're working hard enough, you work harder, because that's, there's talent is maybe 60%, 50% of this. The rest of it is creating your own luck by putting yourself out there and then working harder than everyone else around you to get better, like, to like I say, putting more effort into sending demos out, whatever. Like, these days having a brand is like a thing. So, like, working harder on your brand, like, just be patient, because if you work hard enough, it will happen.
Yeah. And what have been the most special or precious moments from your journey so far?
There's been a few. Like, there's been a few. My memory's not always great when it comes to, like, gigs. I mean, there's been so many times when I've looked out, say, at a festival. Picnic Electronique sticks out in Montreal, where I played in this incredible kind of race course, which was under a massive bridge, and you just have like 4,000 people in front of you or whatever, and I was just like, wow, how the hell did I get here? And it's just crazy to think about, you know, that many people wanted to come and see me just from one place. Do you know what I mean? So that was incredible. Yeah. And then when it comes to music stuff, like, getting just I don't know, it's just I always, the thing is, so my heart, when it comes to highlights for me, I like to set myself goals, like being number one or whatever, or like hitting a certain amount of streams and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then once that's happened, I don't really take it in, which is really bad. I don't like spend the time to sit around thinking about how good an accomplishment that is. I kind of think, well, I've done that now. When it comes to that kind of thing with production work, I don't actually sit back and think, oh, that's done quite well. I just think, right, I need better on the next one.
That was lovely. Thank you so much for coming on my show. This was really fun. I've learned a lot of things.
No, thanks. Hopefully that was okay.
Yeah, it was. Thank you. So that was Huxley, aka Michael. If you guys have any sort of questions that you would like me to ask my guests, or you want to send me a message, you could send me a voice message by clicking on the link below, or you could send me a message on my Instagram handle. It's at the rate Nida Chakrabarty. It's at NIDACHAKRABORTY. Until next time, thank you for tuning in.